It's time for Money for Lunch, where we feed your brain and your business with supersized portions of business and financial news. Now your host, Bert Martinez.
What's up, Money for Lunch? Good to have you guys here. It's always good to have you here. I'm always grateful that you guys stop by and share your time with us. And I know that some of you guys literally, you know, listen to the show while you're having lunch. So thank you for that as well. Anyway, today's quote of the day, let's get it started. Diversity is our strength. What a dull and pointless life it would be if everyone was the same. And that is by actress Angelina Jolie. Our diversity is our strength. What a dull and pointless life it would be if everyone was the same. Totally agree with that. We want everybody to be the same. I'm sorry, we want everybody to be different as long as they're the same. And I know that sounds kind of, oxymoronic, but I think that a lot of us enjoy diversity to a certain point. And then when it's beyond our comfort point, that's when, you know, things start to fall off the cart or whatever. Anyway, today's guest is Douglas M. Branson. Douglas M. Branson is the W. Edward Sell Chair at the University of Pittsburgh. He has been a visiting professor at Cornell University, the Universities of Washington and Hong Kong and Melbourne, among others. He is the author of 23 books on gender and corporate governance. His new book is The Future of Tech is Female, How to Achieve Gender Diversity. Douglas Branson, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
You know, I have to tell you, when my producer sent me this title of the Future of Tech is Female, I automatically envisioned these female robots that you see all over YouTube that are getting more and more, authentic or realistic. And I'm thinking, man, this is just an interesting title. And of course, the subtitle about diversity focused my thinking differently. So, but I'm glad to have you on the show to talk about this. And I really do enjoy this title, The Future of Tech is Female, How to Achieve Diversity. And I want to ask you this, because again, you've written a lot of books. What prompted you to write this book?
I'm a father of two daughters. This is actually my third book on gender diversity and corporate governance. I wrote one in 2007 about directors called No Seat at the Table, and then I wrote one in 2010 about corporate CEOs as females, and that's called The Last Male Bastion. So I suppose way back when, the impetus was I had a colleague who wrote an article about criminal law and that women speak and act in a different register. It doesn't really have any deep meaning to it, but they might interpret Miranda and other kinds of warnings in the criminal law field differently than men would. And that got me to thinking, and I guess that started me on the road to researching this subject. I've written treatises in corporate governance. I wrote the first treatise in the United States, actually, back in 1993, and I started on this about the year 2000.
Gotcha. No, you know, what's interesting, too, I have three daughters, and I think that as your daughters start to enter the world, right, even school, you start to realize that there are some gender biases that, and what's interesting to me is sometimes these gender biases come from other females.
Well, the other side of that coin, though, is that it's far different than it was 40 or 50 years ago, and our daughters can do anything that our sons can. They can play basketball, they can play soccer, they can even play hockey. and they do those things. A predominant number of medical students are female. Law schools are about 50-50. MBA schools, it's about 40% women. So women can do and go places where they couldn't go 20 or 30 or 40 years ago. That's one side of the coin. The other side of the coin, though, is that they can't quite make the inroads they should be making because of these gender biases and imbalance in the way things are viewed.
So let's talk about this a little bit more because, the book is far more than just the tech industry's problem with gender diversity. In your research, have you found that we have this gender diversity issue, not just in tech, but just across the board? I mean, you mentioned law school, you mentioned MBA. So let's look at the business world, the consulting world. Are you seeing this straight across, or is tech more or less when it comes to diversity, gender diversity?
Well, information technology is the worst of any industry, and it's supposedly the cutting edge industry. I think it's 18% of our gross national product now, and less than 5% of the highest paid people are women. Transportation is bad. Financial services is bad. You find some surprises. Some of the forest products companies have 4 and 5 women on their board of directors. In oil and gas, surprisingly, you find that women have achieved higher levels than you ever would have expected. And I think that's because a lot of the dominant males have daughters, and they see things very differently than the dominant males would have seen things 40 years ago. So it's a mixed bag, but it's not – overall, it's not very good anywhere. And I can go into the reasons, some of the reasons for that, but I have a tendency to talk too much. It's an occupational hazard for professors.
All right. Well, we'll see. Maybe if we have time, we can go back to that because I just find it so interesting that, first of all, on one hand, you're right. Our daughters can do more today. I mean, they can really do just about anything the guys can do. I mean, they can go to war. They can go to law school. They can go to, medical school. There's really no holding them back. And so, but then they immediately hit this ceiling, right? They just like, hey, welcome to the club, but not to the other club, I guess. I don't know. It's like, come on in, welcome, but this is about as far as you're going to go.
I've been teaching for over 40 years, and I would say 6 or 7 of the smartest 10 people in any class are female. And women just get misinterpreted because they do speak at a different register. And Deborah Tannen at Georgetown and other linguists have shown that it really has no meaning. But the dominant males interpret it as, well, women are more tentative. Women are more emotional. Women are less analytical. And it's really, there's no basis for saying that. Dominant males tend to look for someone with charisma as a CEO, charisma as a senior executive. Well, by definition, only males have charisma. In the female literature, it's jokingly called 42 longs, referring to suit sizes. And sports metaphors that fit more males than females, like we're looking for a quarterback, we're looking for a team leader, we're looking for somebody who can throw knockout punches. All of those things discriminate against women. And then from sociology, we learn that if you move from one woman in a workspace or a work group or a board of directors to 2 women, you think, well, that's good, that's progress. It's not, actually. Because a token will be joked about and maybe have some stereotypes applied to her. But when 2 people come into a work group that are different, they're black, they're Hispanic, or whatever, the boundaries go up and the dominants engage in what's called boundary hyphening. Because now they feel that the minority group members are a threat. So there are all kinds of sociological, linguistic, and other forces that really don't have any sound basis that work against women and against other minorities, African Americans or Latinos, in the workplace.
Yeah. All right. So let me ask you this then. You know, there's a program out there to help. There's several programs out there to help influence diversity in the workplace. One of them is a program called STEM, STEM. What are your feelings about programs like STEM?
Well, my feelings are mixed. I laud what they do, but too much of the attention, in fact, almost all the attention, is focused on women and what women can do. And on the corporate side, the employer side, efforts have been confined to just statements of noble sentiments. That's not true in every case, but that's probably the bottom line. And so it's time that some of these groups focus less on the women and more on the other side of the equation. And that's what I try and do in this book. You know, information technology was chosen as an example because it is the worst industry. And the editors have kind of jiggled it around to make it seem like it's an objective or goal of the book. But really, the book is about programs that any company can consider for adoption. So you have a multiplicity of organizations. You have the 30-30 Coalition. You have Boardroom Bound. You have Catalyst. I think in my book I count 16 or 17 organizations. But most of them are focused on women. And some of them have conflicts of interest because their funding comes from corporate America. So they kind of pull their punches. Well, they don't even throw a punch with regard to what should be done on the corporate side.
Interesting, interesting. All right, so okay, so let me ask you this. All right, so let's focus on what do you call it, info technology, or what do you call it, the tech area.
Say that again, please.
So I want to focus a little bit on the info technology space or the tech space, and so in your book, and again, I want to shout out the book again. The book is called The Future of Tech is Female. The Future of Tech is Female: How to Achieve Gender Diversity. So, do you have any ideas, any thoughts of how we can make it more diverse? How can we get, you know, maybe fix some of these challenges that we're having in the space?
Well, there's the work-life issue. You know, there's only one half of our race that gives birth to children. And so a lot of women work 2 or 3, 4 years, get their first promotion, work a year. And increasingly, children are born when the mother is 33, 34. It's true of both of my daughters. And we have to make allowances for that. And corporate America has a tin ear. You know, they emphasize FaceTime. Many senior managers regard having a baby as equivalent to playing a game of tennis or preparing to run a marathon. Well, geez, it's the most important thing that happens in our culture, you know, propagation of the race and raising our young. And if a woman takes a year off to have a baby and maybe a year off when her kids are beginning school, that means her working life is 35 or 36 rather than 37 or 38 years. It statistically makes no difference. So easing the off-ramps for women and easing the on-ramps so that more of them will return to the workplace and bring with them experience, bring with them institutional memory. So a lot of enlightened corporations are doing this. They have alumni programs. They have welcome back programs. They have dial-up and dial-down features, so for your career progression. So if you say, well, I want to come back, but I'd only like to do 2 days of work a week. They say, sure, you can do that, and they have you dial down. And then you say, well, my kids are out of the nest or they're in high school. You can dial up. So that's one thing that can be done. The statistics show that males are increasingly doing part of the child rearing and the household tasks, but it's still not up anywhere near parity. Males do 12 hours a week and women do 30 hours a week in the average household. I don't know how you solve that, but so one chapter of my book is about easing the on-ramps, easing the off-ramps. There are quota laws. That's a big subject in Europe. That would never work here. Would never work. I spent a lot of time in Australia and New Zealand. It would never work in those countries as well. The United Kingdom has affirmatively rejected that. There are structured interview processes where requirements require that companies in the final shortlist for promotions to senior executive positions include one or more minorities. That's sometimes called the Rooney Rule, which has had some success in the National Football League. So there are a lot of things that can be done. And my book, I think, outlines 13, 14 different ideas for programs that corporations.
Yeah. So, okay. You know, what's interesting, something that you brought up, and I think that this is, I think, one of the reasons that this shift is happening so slowly, and that is because we've had this shift in the home, where before it was so divided, where, you know, hey, the women stayed at home and raised the kids, and the men went out and worked. As that shifted, and more and more men started realizing exactly what you said, that being able to not only have a child, but to raise that child in a good home environment is critically important. It is the most important thing that we do. And sometimes we as a society forget this. And, and you see that some of these kids that are, I don't want to use the word forgotten, but are somewhat forgotten, I guess. You know, they're the ones that run into trouble. They're the ones that don't do so well at school, and sometimes lead into, getting into legal trouble. So it is such an important thing, and I think that it's just taking us as a society here in America a very long time to realize this. It's crazy how this is taking so long.
Well, we have in this country the hardest working workforce in the world. It's called turbo capitalism. The average American middle manager, senior manager works 6, 7, 8 hours a week longer than anybody in the world. And we're starting to make inroads with family leave programs, but it's just a teeny inroad. What really is needed is more understanding of some of the things you talked about at the corporate level. I think that many people at the corporate level know those things. They just have a tin ear, and if they were prodded, or if there were some program like a comply or explain program in their industry, it would force them to give deeper thought to these issues.
And I think that, again, what we're seeing, at least from my point of view, is that a lot of these, I'll just say the old guard is being replaced by the new guard, and the new guard is a little bit more aware of the family. They want to be more involved with their family, and so I think that you'll see more and more changes when it comes to diversity. Let me ask you this. Do you think that there's just as bad a a racial bias in the tech industry as there is a gender bias? What's your thoughts on that?
Yes, I would imagine there is. There are 5,200 or so directors in the Fortune 500. About 220 of them are persons of color. About 80 of them are Hispanic. So that's about 140 African Americans. So what is the percentage? 2%, 1%? But it's very hard to research because when I originally started these projects, I sent a research team into the library, and I work with them, and we were going to research diversity generally, but it's very difficult to identify who's African American. And it's very difficult. It's less difficult to identify who's Latino or Hispanic. So the students came back to me and said, this is just, very difficult. Sometimes companies publish pictures in their proxy statements, but that's, that's catch as catch can. So we narrowed it to gender diversity. That's much easier to gather empirical evidence. And so I've had students who've done, I had a student, Dan Garcia, a few years ago, who did a partial study on Latinos in corporate governance. But, he ran into the same problems that students had run into 15 years earlier. So there is some bias. There is bias. But it's difficult to get a handle on how deep it goes and the like.
Yeah, that's interesting. At the same time, it kind of makes sense that it would be difficult to find out. All right, so let me ask you this: when it comes to AI, AI, they're talking about it all the time. It's gaining more and more. Acceptance. We're seeing it everywhere. It's the latest evolution of technology. Do you think AI is going to have any kind of impact on gender imbalance?
Well, my wife worked for IBM for about 20 years, and she was on research teams on artificial intelligence, actually. But I am kind of ignorant in a lot of different things. But I think artificial intelligence, as it evolves, may replace a lot of entry-level jobs so that it may reduce the number of entrances for young people generally, but particularly for women. And it remains to be seen whether it will have that effect. I know there are people that in Silicon Valley, there's a coalition of some kind that really wants to look into the long, long-term implications of artificial intelligence. But my thought on the subject and my knowledge does not go real deep.
Gotcha. All right, so let me ask you this. I definitely want to get your opinion on this, and that is there is an argument out there that there just aren't that many qualified women leaders in the workplace, that it's not a gender bias. It's a qualification. What's your take on this?
Well, my book, I research about 70 women who've become higher-level corporate executives or CEOs. Most of them, 70% of them, have MBAs or law degrees. They do not have STEM backgrounds. They do not have – I researched, for example, there are only 27 out of 595 senior executives in the information technology companies I researched that are women. And out of those 27, only two have technical backgrounds. Most women who have achieved success, rising to levels of senior management have business backgrounds, maybe mixed with some technical background or some marketing background. And that's very important, though, because I think overall, executives at the senior level can't be lopsided. You look at male CEOs, male CFOs, male senior executives, if they're truly lopsided, they don't last very long either. I also think, though, that the idea that we're a meritocracy and there are not enough women with merits is kind of the good old boy network bought up to date. In the old days, company executives and boards of directors promoted and looked for people who look like us, who wear the same Brooks Brothers suits, who wear the same rep ties, who belong to the same country clubs. Today, at least in, say, information technology, it may not be external, but internally, they look like us. So they are forgive the word, nerdy computer geeks. And then, of course, instead of opening the gates to more women in information technology, they bring a couple hundred thousand people from India every year on H-1B visas, and a lot of them end up staying here permanently. It's a three-year visa, and it's a dual-intent visa. So while you're on a visa, you can get a three-year extension. That's 6 years, and you can apply for a green card or for citizenship. So there are a number of kind of duplicitous things that are voiced. We're only a meritocracy. Well, if it's not accurate. They still are promoting people who look like us, quote, and they are still denying entry to what I call the glass elevator that propels people up within organizations. They're still populating with, you know, the people who wear rep ties and blue blazers and shop at Brooks Brothers.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. It's like I said, I think it's going to be a situation where a lot of these mindsets are fading out and they'll be replaced, and hopefully their replacements will be a little bit more open-minded. You know, if you could, if you were talking to a room of, you know, CEOs of these companies, what advice would you give them today who would want to maybe correct gender imbalance? Where would they start?
Well, I was asked that question with my first book. I was at a party, a cocktail party or something, and someone who was a CEO of a mid-sized public company, he said, I read your book, very interesting, but what should I tell my employees? And I said, what you have to tell your employees and what I would tell a group of CEOs is equality. You have to treat everybody in your organization, gay or lesbian, female, Latino, equally, except when there is a well-defined biological difference. And in my experience, there's only one such well-defined biological difference, and that is childbearing and to some extent, child-rearing. So treat everybody equally and respect everybody in your organization. And that will, I think, make it more clear that women and other members of minorities can advance just as equally as the 42 longs can.
I like that, the 42 longs. All right. Doug Branson, again, the book is The Future of Tech is Female, How to Achieve Gender Diversity. The author with us today, Douglas M. Branson. Douglas, thank you so much for stopping by. It's been a blast, and looking forward to catching up with you next time.
Okay, the book's on Amazon, so one of the things you got to do as an author is try and sell books.
Absolutely, absolutely. I want everybody to go check out The Future of Tech is Female, How to Achieve Gender Diversity. It's available at Amazon or wherever you like to buy your good books. But definitely on Amazon, The Future of Tech is Female. Doug Branson, thank you so much for stopping by.
Okay, great. Thank you.
You bet. Good stuff there from Professor Douglas M. Branson. And you know what? It's one of those things where I never thought that much about gender diversity or gender imbalance until, of course, I was blessed with three daughters. And so, as I mentioned in the show, sometimes I see gender imbalances even from other females. My daughters are treated, you know, differently by older females who are more indoctrinated, I think, in the old ways of thinking. Anyway, give me your thoughts. Let me know what you think about gender imbalance or gender diversity. Also, please, as always, let's share this episode with everyone you know. Let's help get imbalance or to help promote diversity in the workplace. As always, my friends, thank you so much for being here. Remember, you were created to succeed.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch and check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.